Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 26th of February, and it has been almost a month since I've been with you. For those of you who are wondering what happened to me, I've been wondering the same. I had a heart attack the last day of January and surgery immediately thereafter, and had to rest for a couple weeks, and now have begun a cardiac rehab program, and I am easing back to work. It has not been an easy month. As those of you who have faced life-threatening illnesses know, I'm happy to be here again and will eventually have a better understanding of what this all means and what the meaning of life is. Thanks to Veronica Rickert, Jim Packard, John Munson for filling in for me. And it has been, as you can imagine, I'm such a political junkie, particularly hard to be benched, to be quiet and sitting during the primaries. I was itching to talk with you about each day's events. But of course, politics will continue, and we'll start the first hour of our show today with two wonderful guests examining what happens today with a debate tonight, what happens next in this campaign, and what happened over the weekend. We'll have two guests with us. Ken Rudin joining us in just one moment, one of my favorite guests, political editor for National Public Radio. He directs campaign coverage for the network, is a frequent guest on all the NPR news shows. He's a weekly guest on Talk of the Nation. He writes the Political Junkie for NPR's website. And since 1984 has covered all aspects of politics, presidential contests, the primaries, national conventions, general elections, races for the House, the Senate, the gubernatorial races. He says he has been a political junkie for 20 years. A little bit later, Sandy Horwitt will join us. You may remember the interview we did with Sandy last July, a book on Feingold, A New Democratic Party. He is author of several other books, and he's written a really interesting column in Huffington Post in which he says that it is time, really, for Senator Hillary Clinton to say that she's going to withdraw, that she needs to take the high road. Hillary's best bet, an unexpectedly quick, gracious, and magnanimous departure from the race could serve, he says, as the first step in her journey to becoming a new Hillary Clinton. Oh, we have so many phone calls. We're going to have a lot of phone calls this hour, and we welcome your thoughts on all of the races and where they are now. And here is how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Or send an email if you'd like. And that address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hello, Ken.
Kathleen, I'm so glad you're back, but to be honest with you, you didn't really miss much. Not much has happened in the past month.
Oh, Ken, that's not true. No, I've been watching television and listening to the radio.
Hillary Clinton is still the front runner. John McCain has no chance, and basically, it's amazing. You know, if you had missed a week, you'd miss a lot. It's just amazing how fast this thing is moving.
It is amazing. So did it all start with spending $1,200 on Dunkin' Donuts in January?
Well, you know what it was? It was like we're going to win in Iowa, we're going to win in New Hampshire, and if worse comes to worse, we'll wrap it up on Super Tuesday, February 5th. And that did not happen, obviously. The Clinton campaign did not win Iowa. They did win New Hampshire, which was also a surprise. But then there was a split decision on February 5th. Since then, the Obama campaign has won 11 straight contests. And it's almost that the Clinton campaign doesn't know what to do. They don't know which Hillary Clinton should come out. We saw in the last debate that, you know, at the end of the debate, she was saying how, you know, thankful she was to be on the same stage as Barack Obama, that they were going to be friends no matter what. And in the intervening hours since then, she's really launched one attack after another on Barack Obama.
She sure has. So what is her message now? Is she just trying out different messages or what?
Well, it seems like that, first of all, the plagiarism message, which she tried to do during the debate, obviously didn't work, and especially didn't work when a lot of people have pointed out that her closing comment that for all the hits I've taken, the country has taken worse hits, that's word for word what Bill Clinton said in the 1992 campaign. So, so much for the plagiarism argument. But her main argument really is that Barack Obama, for all of 2-3 years in the U.S. Senate, does not have the foreign policy experience to be president on day one. Now, of course, Obama Obama's argument is that the difference between there's a difference between ready on day one and being right on day one. And his point is that Hillary Clinton, by voting for the war in Iraq in 2002, giving President Bush the authority to go to war, that was a wrong move. So for her to call him inexperienced and naive, he tries to turn the tables on her on that same argument.
Yeah. Is it fair, do you think, Ken, to hold her accountable for NAFTA, which really was her husband's deal?
Well, yes, and I'll tell you why, because she has spent much of the campaign talking about the great, not how great the 1990s were and how great the 8 years of the Clinton, Bill Clinton administration were, and how, you know, how the important role she played in that, everything from the botched health care plan to everything else she's done. So for her, now she's saying that, well, you know, NAFTA was really discussed and negotiated during the policies, during the administration of the first Bush administration. Well, that's startling to me. I mean, all along she's been saying that NAFTA worked, NAFTA was a success. It's part of the Bill Clinton accomplishments. But now, of course, in Ohio, where jobs are, they're losing jobs rapidly. And, of course, there's some debate whether NAFTA is responsible. But, of course, NAFTA is still a dirty word in Ohio that votes, which votes next Tuesday. She's saying she's suddenly divorcing herself, not from Bill Clinton, but from NAFTA.
Yeah. And what about Bill Clinton? Frank Rich had an interesting column Sunday in which he said it is the husband who has sabotaged the heroin, the single biggest factor in her collapse, is Bill Clinton.
Well, I think, I mean, it's really unfair. And, you know, you think of famous women who have been involved in politics. And, you, of course, you think of the groundbreaking vice presidential candidacy of Geraldine Ferraro in 1984. At the same time, she was haunted by questions about her husband's financial dealings. So it certainly is unfair to saddle women with mistakes of their husbands. And we've seen that time and time again. But getting past that, Bill Clinton, of course, I think the beginning of the end, I don't know if this is the end for Hillary Clinton, but certainly the beginning of the bad news came around South Carolina when Bill Clinton, you know, perhaps played racial politics in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Hillary campaign suffered as a result of it.
Yeah. What was with this speech a couple days ago? I don't think this does her well. When she was talking about mocking his speech, mocking the way that he gives hope to so many people, you see it on their faces. It's one of the wonderful things about his campaign, bringing people into the campaign. You know, when she mocks, the sky will open, light's going to come down, there will be celestial choirs, etc. Why is she using that message?
Well, I think she is. First of all, I think the whole campaign, including Hillary Clinton, is unbelievably frustrated mm-hmm. by the fact that somebody they see is not much more than just a great, you know, a rhetorician,
right,
you know, somebody who gives a great speech. But look, if you buy the argument, and many people do, that the last 7 years have not been that great, that President Bush's numbers are down in 30%, deservedly so, that the war is so unpopular that people are concerned about their future, concerned about health care, concerned about rising gas prices, hope is not a bad thing to have. Hope is not a bad word to use. And, of course, Hillary Clinton says, well, you have to have more than hope. And she even compared Obama's optimism to the George W. Bush's compassionate conservative optimism of 2000, which is, I mean, anybody comparing Obama and Bush is kind of, I mean, that's kind of stretching things there. But she's trying to make the point that you can't just have such faith in an untested quality. We did it with George Bush, and she said, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Whatever the whoever gets shamed, but she doesn't want the country to be shamed again with an untested person like Barack Obama.
Gotcha. And yet these polls today are saying that she is viewed as more prepared for the job of president, and so is Senator McCain. Does that bode ill for Senator Obama?
Well, at the same time, if you talk to Democrats, they also feel that Obama has a better shot at winning in November, that Hillary Clinton still has tremendously high negatives, that she probably would hurt the Democratic ticket, according to these polls, than Barack Obama. But the polls about his experience is exactly right. For all, I mean, she has. Look, she's been in the Senate like 7-8 years, and she served time as First Lady in both Arkansas and the United States. So she has that 35 years of worldly experience that she likes to talk about. And, of course, John McCain, who's been in the Senate and in Congress since 1983, has tremendous amount of foreign policy experience. Ultimately, if the choice in November is about foreign policy and foreign policy experience, perhaps Barack Obama could be at a disadvantage. But right now, there is that excitement excitement about him that's carrying him to all these victories in the primaries and caucuses.
And let's talk a little bit more about that excitement. Why is it that we seem to be willing to take a chance on somebody who doesn't have as much experience, whose resume may be much thinner than hers, who offers hope, but we don't exactly know what else he offers?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, a lot of it is a gut feeling. A lot of it is personality. It's certainly not on the issues. I mean, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama opposed the war in Iraq. Of course, they may not have in the beginning, but they certainly do now. The differences on health care are probably minimal. Perhaps Hillary Clinton's plan covers more Americans. Barack Obama argues that it's his plan is more affordable. That's kind of nickeling and diming. And a lot of it is gut instinct and a lot of it is personality. And the truth is that, you know, for all the love that many Democrats had for Bill Clinton in the 1990s, Hillary Clinton is not... I mean, there's a tremendous affection for her among many women around the country. But I think if you look at the numbers, there's still a reservation about her that she just doesn't have that huggable quality that Barack Obama has. Now, again, you know, people will argue that, look, George W. Bush sold himself in 2000 as a guy you want to have beer with. And obviously so many things have happened since 2000, 2001, that having a beer with somebody is not the solution to our problems. But right now we're on this Obama high and to obviously to Hillary Clinton's disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it started, Ken, maybe this is just me speaking because I'm from Illinois and I love Abraham Lincoln, as people know who listen to my show.
Well, you covered his first campaign.
Yeah,
that
right.
Stephen Douglas race was amazing.
It sure was. But the guy just has such a sense of bringing you up. This announcement at the old State House, the old Capitol building in Springfield, Illinois, you know, Abraham Lincoln's territory, his law office right across the street. It was just a moment that, you know, when you look at race issues, when you look at hope, when you look at where we were then in the Civil War and all, it had to get to you on some level. It got to me.
It got to a lot of people and a lot of Democrats, you know, all the Democrats who were so frustrated by Ronald Reagan's popularity in the 1980s, they felt the same thing. They said, what is it about this guy's an actor? This guy has nothing to say. But there's for some Republicans
right.
who were tired of Jimmy Carter, who mm-hmm. were tired of foreign policy embarrassments. Ronald Reagan gave them that hope and good feeling that, you know, they didn't have in the last previous administration.
Yeah, he had the twinkle in the eye, Ken.
He did.
Yes, he did. We're going to welcome phone calls and we'll take them in just a moment. I know you want to jump in here and talk about all of these issues. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Before we go to phones, though, just briefly, your preview of the debate tonight. It's going to be an interesting debate because I wonder who Senator Clinton is going to be.
Exactly. Everybody says the same thing, which Hillary Clinton will show up. We saw her at the end of the last debate being very congenial, very mm-hmm. friendly, and then she's really, you know, been frothing, you know, since then. But look, nothing seems to be working. This is probably the last debate they'll ever have. Tuesday is a whole ball game. Even Bill Clinton said if she doesn't win Ohio and Texas, it's hard to make the case. She has a shot for the nomination. And so something's going to have to happen. But look, if you look at the debaters, the moderators, Tim Russert of NBC, he's never been easy on Hillary Clinton. Matter of fact, I think he's the one who gave her the hardest time in the debates, going back to the October debate when he asked her about driver's licenses for illegal immigrants and she didn't have a mm-hmm. seemingly a cogent answer. So he's very tough on her, and she knows that she's going to have to make a knockout blow. But look, people, this is the 20th debate. I can't imagine a knockout blow because people have – it's one thing if people didn't know who Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are. They know who they are, and I kind of think that it's hard to imagine a shocking surprise that would alter the dynamics of the race.
Ken Rudin is with us. We're welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Ken is political editor for National Public Radio. He's been a political junkie for 30 years, has more campaign buttons than probably anybody in the world. He has the political junkie column for the NPR website, and he's on Talk of the Nation, and he's on the news, and he's with us now. To you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ken Rudin is our guest, and we go to your phone calls now a little bit later this hour. Sandy Horwitt will be joining us. Sandy is author of Feingold, a New Democratic Party, and he has written a piece for the Huffington Post, which I'm sure will grab your attention, which is titled Friendly Advice for Hillary, The Best Way to Play a Losing Hand. Jim from Salt Lake City is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. It's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you, Jim.
We miss you. Hey, I have one comment and one question. I know I'm looking too far down the road, but if Barack wins, I hope Hillary will take the second spot. And if she doesn't, I hope he asks Joe Biden. And my question for our guest is, what's up with Texas, a primary caucus state? Is it the rural areas having a caucus and the urban areas are having a primary? Why would you divide the state up like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Ken?
Well, as far as the first question first, no, Hillary Clinton, I can't imagine her being anybody's vice president. She is she's presidential caliber, not a number two. And I think she'd be very happy going back to the Senate. As far as Joe Biden, obviously Barack Obama would need to pick somebody with foreign policy expertise. This morning, Chris Dodd of Connecticut,
yes,
or another former presidential candidate with a lot of foreign policy experience, also endorsed Obama. So his name has been mentioned. Obviously, there's going to have to, just like George W. Bush needed gravitas on the foreign front for his VP, perhaps Obama will have to go the same way. Biden is a possibility. Dodd's a possibility. As for Texas, it is confusing. There is a full primary, and then after the primary is over, then many Democrats go to caucus to allocate even more delegates. It's very confusing. It's been a very confusing primary year. Nevada, Hillary Clinton won the state, but Barack Obama got more delegates. It's very, you know, it's kind of like not the way I would do it. But clearly, it's going to be a state where even if Hillary Clinton wins the state, Barack Obama could emerge with more delegates, and that'll be one more frustrating thing for the Clinton campaign.
And where do you see Texas right now? Do you think the polls are rapidly changing in the state of Texas? Could he win that state, Ken?
He could. The last poll I saw has it, you know, pretty much even, perhaps Obama with a slight lead. In Ohio, Hillary Clinton on Valentine's Day had a 21-point lead. Ooh. Now it's down to 9, 10, or 11. So things have been moving rapidly. And again, it's one of those unanswerable questions, all the things that has gone wrong for the Clinton campaign since she was the presumptive nominee.
And explain to me, it happened in Wisconsin, too, where I thought it'd be maybe a 4 or 5 point win for Obama. He won big in this state as well. Why has he won so many states by such a wide margin?
Well, Wisconsin was a big shock for many people, and especially look at where he won. He started doing very well with blue collar white voters that had been Hillary Clinton's strong point. He ran almost even with Hillary Clinton among women, and of course that was a big shocker. In the latest, I guess it was a Gallup poll, the USA Today Gallup poll that came out today, he's up 23 points with among white men. And so, you know, the more you see Obama campaign, the better he's doing. And it's just startling. It's just as we left John McCain for dead last summer and never thought he would come back. Never did we think that Hillary Clinton would fade like this.
Yes, you're right. It is.
But it's not over. It is not over. I mean, look, if on Wednesday, March 5th, the headlines say Hillary Clinton wins Texas, Ohio, then of course the ball game continues. But ultimately, even if she wins Texas and Ohio by a narrow margin, she may only net 4 or 5 delegates. And again, the name of the game is delegates.
So if she does win those by that margin, is she out of the game?
Well, a lot of people think so. I mean, of course, they say that even though if she wins the two states, if she's only right now, she's about 100 delegates shy of Barack Obama. If she only nets 4 or 5, you know, that's not much of a victory. But other people say, look, you know, when you have headlines like that, seeing winning those two big states, remember, she won the big states of California and New York and New Jersey and other, you know, she's done well on Super Tuesday. But unfortunately for her, not since.
Right. Thanks so much, Jim, for your call. Boyd from Milwaukee. Hey, Boyd.
Hello, Kathleen. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad to hear your voice. Hello, Ken. Actually, two questions. The first one, the previous caller actually did address. I'm wondering, who do you think would be some of the potential VP candidates of all the players that are still in it? But my other thing was, and this is something I'm really grappling with, we have a new person that's made his presence felt, and that's Ralph Nader. And, you know, I hear what Ralph Nader says, and, you know, I think he is so dead on, but I think Ralph Nader has put himself in between a rock and a hard place in this election, because I think a lot of people who in the past would have voted for him, they're thinking, and I think many believe this, if it weren't for Ralph Nader, we wouldn't be in the mess that we are in now with the war in Iraq, i.e. many believe Gore would have won. And I know that's a very contested argument. What's your take on it?
Well, okay. I mean, this of course came up on Sunday when he announced his candidacy on Meet the Press. The fact remains that Ralph Nader got 97,000 votes in Florida in the year 2000 as a third party candidate. George W. Bush officially won the state by 536 votes total. A lot of people feel, probably justifiably, that many of the 97,000 votes that went to Nader would have gone to Al Gore instead of George W. Bush. He would have won the state and thus the presidency. But as Ralph Nader has said over and over again, and he's been saying this ever since 2000, that Al Gore should have won his own home state of Tennessee and did not. He should have won Arkansas and did not. It was the gun vote that's hurt Al Gore in many states like West Virginia, and plus the fact that as Ralph Nader said on Sunday, 250,000 Democrats in Florida voted for George W. Bush. So if we want to blame, there's a lot of blame to go around. Yes, Ralph Nader should take some of the blame, but so should the Gore campaign, and so should the many Democrats who voted for Bush in Florida in 2000. So it's not just Ralph Nader, but obviously there are a lot of Democrats who will never forgive Nader's candidacy for what he, you know, by having the temerity to run in 2000.
Thanks, Boyd, for your call. We go to Adam next from Vilas County. Hi, Adam.
Hi, good morning. And I think this is an interesting show. I want your guest to pretend he's Hillary Clinton in tonight's debate. And I'm going to be Barack Obama and ask the question I'd like your guest to respond to. Senator Clinton, in a long series of debates, you've made a point about my lack of experience and the ability to be commander-in-chief from day one. In 1992, one candidate had been vice president and president of the United States for 12 years, ambassador to the United Nations, ambassador to China, and head of the Central Intelligence Agency. The other candidate came from a small Central American state in the middle of America and had virtually no foreign policy experience at all. I have been in the Senate for several years dealing with foreign policy issues. Would you explain to your audience and the American people why I am less qualified than Bill Clinton was in 1992? And if so, in 1992, would you have made the same charge against Bill Clinton?
You get to be Senator Clinton here, Ken.
Well, enough of the impersonations. I cannot do impersonations. But okay, well, that's a fair point, and I think the answer, if Hillary Clinton had the best answer, would be that in 1992 the nation was not really talking about foreign policy and relationships around the world. 9/11 has changed everything. 9/11 changed everything in the sense that it's just a whole new world, and you need a whole new set of qualifications to run for president. Hillary Clinton, having been in the White House for 8 years, having been in the Senate, having been serving on the Armed Services Committee, she has the experience and the know-how to be ready from day one. Now, that's her argument. The problem with that argument, of course, is, as Barack Obama has pointed out, if the war is such a terrible thing, then why didn't she know from day one that it would be a disaster, and why did she vote for it in 2002? If George Bush, as he says, fooled her in 2002, how do we trust her judgment in 2008? And that's the problem that Hillary Clinton faces on this argument.
You have time for one more phone call?
I do.
All right. We go to
Actually, I have 15 more minutes.
Oh, great. We'll put you on with Sandy. Good. Laverne from Monroe. Hi.
Hello, Kathleen. Welcome back.
Thanks, Laverne.
Hello, Ken.
Hi, Laverne.
I think if Hillary's going to win, she's going to have to talk about the economy just like her husband did. It's the economy, stupid. Now, when I was up to Monona Terrace, I shook her hand. And Senator Obama and Senator Clinton both wants to tax the hedge fund dealers. I happen to be wearing a purple shirt that said tax hedge fund dealers. She picked that up in a few seconds. She got up on the stage. She pointed at me, and she said, that gentleman is right. We should tax hedge fund dealers. Somebody that could pick up something that fast in an audience like that there, I think, is intelligent enough to run the country, and definitely on the economy. I'd like to know how they're going to spend the hedge fund money, though. Please comment.
Well, Laverne Shirley, you no, I'm sorry, it's a cheap joke. Well, actually, the thing is that Barack Obama is trying to use the economy to his advantage in Ohio, and this is a part of the conversation we had earlier in the show that go back to the NAFTA argument that the jobs that the North American Free Trade Association agreement that was signed during the Clinton administration has come back to bite Ohio. Aside from Michigan, I believe Ohio has the most. Has lost the most net number of jobs in the country. And if that's the case, and if you could blame, if you could demagogue the NAFTA issue enough, you can make the case that NAFTA is responsible for it. And I suspect that that Barack Obama, by using that issue, by pointing out that the Clinton's involvement in NAFTA, that's how they're using the economy issue in a state like Ohio.
Thanks, Laverne, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We're going to – Ken has a few more minutes. We're going to keep him with us and also add to the conversation Sandy Horwood, longtime friend of this show, author most recently of Feingold, A New Democratic Party, which was released last summer. He's also the author of Let Them Call Me Rebel, a biography of Saul Alinsky. He's written books and essays for book reviews for The New York Times, The Washington Post, San Francisco Chronicle, Chicago Tribune. He was a speechwriter for Congressman Abner Mikva and has strong Wisconsin ties, was born in the fair city of Milwaukee, wrote a piece for the February 19 Huffington Post, which is sure to get the phones ringing, and I'm sure you'll have a response to it as well, Ken, titled Friendly Advice for Hillary, The Best Way to Play a Losing Hand. Hello, Sandy.
How are you?
I'm recuperating. I'm better. How
well, it's never been better to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Sounds wonderful.
Thank you. It's never been better for me to hear my voice, too, as you can imagine. Do you know Ken? I would imagine you two know each other.
Well, I've listened to Ken, you know, and I'm a big fan. This is the first time we've been, so to speak, in the same room together.
Yeah. Ken, Sandy. Sandy, Ken.
Hi, Sandy. And I'm well aware of the thing about it, when it's time for Hillary to drop out, and that is a big talk on the blogosphere.
Yes, it is. You've created a bit of a stir here, Sandy. It's time for her to say she's been privileged to be part of the great watershed in the history of our country. It's time for her to bow out. Why?
Well, you know, I started that piece by saying that you know, when even a good professional poker player is stuck with a bad hand, a lot of them, you know, don't really know when it's time to drop out because they've invested so much of their ego as well as their chips in the pot. And, you know, they can fool themselves. The great poker players really do know that it's time to drop out, and they know that they will be able to play another day, when the probability is much better that they can win. And that's really what I think this race for the Democratic presidential nomination has come down to. I wrote this piece right after the results of the Wisconsin primary came in. And as someone who still thinks of himself as a Wisconsin person, I was really pleased that Wisconsin this year played such a big role in the nomination process. I think that, you know, Hillary's great win in New Hampshire really kind of saved her candidacy. But at the other end of this whole long, interesting process, I think Wisconsin is the definitive result that really this is over. And in this respect, and kind of kiddingly, the only thing I would disagree of all the things that Ken said earlier in the program is that I do think it is over. You know, Yogi Berra's wonderful line, it's not over until it's over. It's not always exactly right. Sometimes it is over before it's over. And I think this is one of those cases. And I'd cite just two quick results in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Barack Obama won 62 out of 72 counties. You know, when I researched the Feingold book, I went all over the state over about a five-year period. I've been to almost all of those counties. It is such a diverse state in so many ways, including, of course, politically, that to win 62 out of 72 counties is a huge victory. And then another statistic that I think is really important, both for the primary process as well as the general election. and that is Obama's decisive win among independents. About 28% of the electorate on primary day in Wisconsin said they were independents, and Barack Obama won that vote 2-1. That's a landslide. And in this country, both of during primaries, especially when they're open primaries, such as Wisconsin, but then in the general election, a candidate must carry independent voters to win. There aren't enough Democrats or enough Republicans. And so those two statistics on election night really led me to write this piece that has gotten some attention.
Do you think that she, well, considering the way she's been the last few days, it's hard to imagine her taking your suggestion here, Sandy, but do you think that she will know when to quit, and when might that be? Would it be after Texas and Ohio, or after next week, or when?
Well, you know, I'm not sure she didn't make a tentative decision maybe not to go on if you saw the last debate. I received a number of phone calls and emails from acquaintances and friends after the last debate. If you remember, toward the end,
she
turned to Barack Obama and she said, in effect, this has been an honor to be part of this with you, and they shook hands. And the calls that I started getting were from friends were along the lines of, it sounds like she's taken your advice. And that was picked up a little bit in the next day or two until, of course, as Ken also referenced, a whole different set of other messages kind of overwhelmed whatever that was about in the close during the debate the other night. So I'm not so sure that there hasn't been, you know, a clash of perhaps factions within the Clinton campaign about, you know, what to do post Wisconsin. Wisconsin was just an extremely important state, and the result, as I see it, you know, put the handwriting on the wall.
Ken, how important was Wisconsin?
You know, something, as Sandy was just talking, I was nodding my head. I don't know if you saw me nodding my head.
No.
Or heard me nodding my head. But I agree, because I think we all thought it would be close. We all thought that there were a lot of demographics there that could help Hillary Clinton to rescue her candidacy. And he triumphed in almost every category. And I think that, you know, Wisconsin, which thought it would be, you know, they thought the race would be over by the time they got to Wisconsin. But I think it proved to be a very significant primary result.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about the stir, Sandy, that this piece has been creating. Who are you hearing from? Are people mad at you, or do they agree with you, or what?
Well, you'll appreciate this, Kathleen. Tomorrow I'm having a kind of a peace party with a very good friend of mine who is a zealous, avid is the better word, Hillary Clinton supporter. And when she heard about this piece that I wrote, she sent me an email, and the subject line was outraged. And she went on for some paragraph saying that she couldn't believe that I had written this piece telling Hillary it was all over. So we're meeting tomorrow to kind of repair our friendship. We're in good shape. But there were strong feelings, I think, on both sides. And on the comments that I saw on the Huffington Post, they were kind of right down the middle. People who are really strong still for Hillary Clinton, argued the other way, and then the Obama people said absolutely that's what she ought to do. And I have not endorsed any candidate. I've been watching this race as Ken has, as someone who is fascinated with politics. And I must say I have a kind of a special interest, to use a inapt term, I guess, in this context, because of my other biography that I wrote.
Saul Alinsky.
Mentioned, yes, because both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have a connection to the father of community organizing, Saul Alinsky. Hillary wrote her senior thesis at Wellesley on Alinsky and his ideas, was offered a job with him in Chicago, instead decided to go to Yale Law School, where she met a fellow law student, and we know about that story.
We know that story, yep.
Barack Obama, though, actually went to your hometown of Chicago in a very formative period of his young adult life, when he was just about 23 years old, and for more than 3 years was a community organizer, and he talks about this constantly. Mm-hmm. In fact, on the night of the Wisconsin primary, if you were watching TV, you saw Barack Obama give a big speech in Houston. He was already campaigning in Texas when all the Wisconsin results came in. And in one passage of his speech, he talked about being a community organizer in Chicago. And he said, it was the most important education I ever received because I learned that ordinary people have an extraordinary capacity to change things. And as someone who has studied Alinsky and community organizing, that, in fact, is really what often happens. And I know that that really was what Barack Obama did learn as a community organizer.
Yeah, and he was darn good at it from what I've heard from people who kept track of his work there. Let me just bounce one of your statements in your piece in Huffington Post off Ken, and then we'll pause, and Ken has to go, and we'll continue with you. I'm interested in hearing more about why he brings up this community organizing as often as he does. Ken, he writes, what do you think of this? Sandy does. Hillary Clinton's stature as a party leader, including her influence in the Senate, will get a considerable boost, as will her standing with independent voters, especially those who backed Obama in the primaries, if she withdraws now. What do you think of that?
With all due respect to Sandy, I am never in a position to feel that I think that a candidate should pull out of a race. I think that it's up to the voters. I think she certainly has a good shot at Texas and Ohio. They tried to make the argument with Ted Kennedy in 1980 when he was running against President Carter that he should drop out. They tried to make the argument with Ronald Reagan when he challenged President Ford in 76. They have all the right to continue their candidacy. They've invested millions of hours, dollars, time, staffers to
donuts.
Fulfill this dream. Dunkin' Donuts. So I think, no, let the voters decide. We shouldn't decide for the candidates. The voters should.
Ken, thank you. You're always such a treat to have on the air. I love your energy and
Kathy,
intelligence.
I'm so glad you're back, and I'm sure everybody missed you, and it's great to have you back.
Thanks, Ken. Ken Rudin, Sandy is going to stay with us. We pause for a moment, and we'll go to your phone calls. There are many of them. Our bank is full, actually, but just keep trying, and you'll get through. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sandy Horwood is our guest. He is author, most recently, of Feingold, a wonderful book, which was published last July. Also author of Let Them Call Me Rebel, a biography of Saul Alinsky. He was a speechwriter for Congressman Abner Mikva, and he was born in the city of Milwaukee. If you would like to read the piece he wrote that says that it is time for Senator Hillary Clinton to withdraw from the presidential race, it is in the February 19 Huffington Post. That's huffingtonpost.com. All right, let's go to phone calls for you, Sandy, to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Good morning. I wanted to an example of some of the organization that's happening with the Obama campaign or what he's inspiring. There's a video from the first day of early voting in Texas. A primarily black college, Prairie View A&M, had to march. They got 1,000 students to march 7 miles to the closest voting. It can be found on YouTube. Box the Vote, I think, is the name of their organization, and they closed down a highway. I just think that Obama is better organized and inspiring people, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in a president. I think that the argument about lack of experience kind of is gone now since he's winning. You know, I mean, we're seeing that he knows how each individual state works and has a strategy and an implementation.
He sure does. He is very well organized.
Ready from day one kind of rings hollow after a series of victories, and the last poll I saw was he's up 4 points in Texas. So I think she's gonna lose that one too. Even if the numbers stay close on the polls, I think he's better organized, and that's what's getting these decisive victories.
Mm-hmm. He is very well organized, isn't he, Sandy? He's run one heck of a ground campaign.
Yes, and it's no accident. I think this comes out of his community organizing background. Mm-hmm. There are people in the campaign who really genuinely understand what community organizing is about, and they've applied a lot of those principles and methods to this campaign. And one brief comment on the caller's good remarks. Another, I think, wonderful sort of result in process so far is how many young people have become energized about especially the Democratic side of the presidential nominating process. The turnout of young people is up in almost every state that's had a primary or a caucus. And in Wisconsin, Obama clearly won the lion's share of that youth vote.
What about this idea, and you hear it from various commentators now, Sandy, that we aren't really sure what kind of president he will be, and that seems to be okay with a lot of people, that his resume is fairly thin.
Well, I think you alluded to this, Kathleen. You know, Lincoln's resume was pretty thin,
yeah.
And his rivals, as Doris Kearns Goodwin, you know, called them and wrote about him in that wonderful book of hers, were all on paper, you know, sort of better qualified men of stature, and Lincoln was none of that. I think the best you can sort of hope for as a citizen looking at candidates for our highest office is whether someone's reasonably intelligent, whether they seem to be a person of good character, whether they've got good judgment, and they're not trigger happy. They're not going to lead us into bad military situations. How all of that works out in the specifics of making decisions once you're in the Oval Office, no one really ever knows. George Bush campaigned on, you know, not being a president who was going to be a nation builder, and, you know, 9/11 apparently changed his worldview. Franklin Roosevelt ran on a platform of balancing the budget, and once he was elected, you know, that clearly went out the window. So I think you can only look at some of the basic qualities of a man or woman running for president, and then as a citizen, make your best judgment.
Mm-hmm. And let's go back for a few moments to this community organizing, which he brings up in so many speeches. Why does he do that, Sandy?
Well, because I think it really was one of probably the most important educational experiences of his adult life, and how he still likes to see himself. I am always, when I start to watch a speech of his on C-SPAN, after 15 or 20 minutes, if he hasn't mentioned it, I start to say to myself, well, when is it going to come? Because he cannot talk for more than about 20 minutes without referring to that experience. It was very powerful for him. It is not just good speech material in the, you know, somewhat cynical fashion. I think it really is pretty much how he sees the world. Let me give you one quick example of how I think that perspective will be part of how a President Obama might, you know, view political situations. He said a couple weeks ago that one of the ways he would handle the debate about national health insurance differently than, say, it was handled during the Clinton years, is that he would want to put all the deliberations on C-SPAN and not have anything in secret so that the people could see all of the negotiating and argumentation back and forth. Well, that sounds like maybe a kind of naive, just good government commitment to transparency. I mean, no one's ever against transparency. But really, ultimately, what that idea is about power. It is about changing the dynamics of who really is at the table.
Mm-hmm.
People not only watch it on C-SPAN, but journalists will be able to write about it. People will be able to talk about it and weigh in. That is really a community organizer looking at a tough political situation and figuring out how they can change the ratio based on the dynamics of power.
Let's go to more phone calls. Thanks, Tom, very much for your call. George is next from Krivitz. Hi, George.
Hi. Glad you're back.
Thank you.
Just a comment that I heard on TV. Farrakhan, Mohammed Farrakhan.
Louis Farrakhan.
from Chicago.
Yeah.
He has given an endorsement to Obama. Now, Obama's comment back was, I agree with some of the things he says, but not all. My question is, why didn't he be more specific, with a little specificity there, as to what Obama does agree with regarding Farrakhan, who's known as an extreme racist?
Sandy?
I've heard of any endorsement or what Obama may have said or may not have said, so I don't have anything to really add to what the caller just said.
Yeah. You can see something like that being used, maybe I'm off base here, but you can see it being used against him should he be the candidate in the national race, to quote Farrakhan's endorsement, because it's the kind of endorsement that you almost wish he hadn't made, right? I did not hear Obama's response to that either, but I was aware of his endorsement. Thanks, George, very much for your call. And we have some lines open if you want to join us. Grab them. We've been real busy here. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Mark is next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Welcome back, Kathleen. Take good care of yourself. We want you around for a long more time.
Thanks.
A lot more time.
Thank you.
Two things. First, I like the comment about Lincoln. Lincoln was somebody who surrounded himself with good people, and I think both the Clinton campaign and the Obama campaigns can do that, but it seems like Obama's doing a better job of it. Obama has done a great job of putting all 50 states in play, kind of the Howard Dean strategy. But my question is, how can you comment about what you feel the importance is of the polls that show a matchup of Obama versus McCain versus Clinton versus McCain, and how that should play into the thinking of the Clinton camp as they get down to this make or break point? My answer off the air. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, I think most of the polls, and Kathleen, you referred at the beginning of the program this morning to one of the most recent, the New York Times CBS poll, which shows Obama with a widening national lead among Democrats. And I think most of the national polls in the last week or two also show that in a general election matchup that Obama fares better, significantly better, against John McCain than Hillary Clinton. I think it's too early to really say this far out. It's hard to believe we have almost 7 more months to go.
I know. Oh, my.
Before the November 4th election. And I love to make predictions, but I am not ready to make a prediction about the outcome of what I think will be a Barack Obama-John McCain race. They both have, I think, some real pluses, real assets, and it could be very close or maybe not, and I think we have to watch this play out for a while, for at least for me, before I have a better sense of how this may ultimately be decided in November.
Right. And for those of you who are thinking, what about John McCain, the whole second hour of our program will be devoted to John McCain, so stay with us. We're going to look at him pretty extensively the second hour of the show. Let me ask you, I know it's a campaign and people expect some of this rhetoric, but do you think that Senator Clinton has damaged her reputation by what happened at the debate, this, I'm honored, I'm absolutely honored to be sitting next to you, to shame on you, Barack Obama, to, making fun of the clouds will open and celestial choirs will sing, et cetera. She's been extremely harsh the last couple of days. What does that do for her, Sandy?
Well, I don't think it does anything that's beneficial for her. And this is really was a big part of my Huffington Post piece. And I certainly understand that Ken Rudin, as a neutral NPR journalist, would say and should say that we're not in the business, and I think we, meaning reporters, of telling candidates that they should pull out. I'm in a little different role. I'm not supporting either Obama or Hillary Clinton publicly, but I think as an observer that Hillary Clinton really is now hurting her political career. How much remains to be seen. You know, people over time will, you know, sort of forget specifics. But, you know, I even wrote a little bit of a speech for her in this Huffington Post piece. And, you know, part of it was having her say that she was going to stop campaigning and concede this to Obama because a prolonged, drawn-out, and potentially contentious ending for the party's nomination wasn't in the best interest of the party or the country, because in her view, it would be so important for a Democrat to be elected in November. And so I think this harshness that you referred to is, first of all, I don't think it's going to be effective. And secondly, I think it just hurts her, at least in the short run.
Somehow, I don't anticipate she's going to use that part of the speech that you recommended tonight. What do you think?
Well, I think the commitment has been made by the campaign to at least go until a week from today, to March 4th, and you know that they will hope against hope that you know they will have big victories on March 4th. That lightning will strike, and the campaign will be resurrected. I think, as I mentioned about the poker player with a losing hand, that, you know, that probabilities are heavily against that happening.
Sandy, thank you so much for being with us. Always a great pleasure to speak with you.
Great hearing your voice, Kathleen.
Sandy Horwitt, he is author most recently of Feingold, A New Democratic Party, just released last summer. He's also author of Let Them Call Me Rebel. We interviewed him many years ago on that one, a biography of Saul Alinsky. And if you go to the February 19 Huffington Post, you'll get the piece that we've been referencing so much this hour. Thanks also to Ken Rudin, to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program and for on-air production as well. We'll return following the news.